You're listening to Next Stop CPA, the official podcast for the CPA exam, brought to you by the AICPA.
Welcome to another episode of Next Stop CPA. Navigating through your CPA journey can be a bit tricky. There's a lot of information to remember when it comes to the CPA exam, and with that, sometimes you'll find misinformation floating around online. We're here to break down what's really truth and what's simply a myth. And remember, for the most accurate, up-to-date information about the CPA exam, including requirements, content information, scoring details, and more, be sure to visit aicpa.org/CPA exam. So here to help us decipher what's fact and what's fiction is AICPA Lead Manager of Exam Content, Lori Kelly. Lori, thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Lauren. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So we'll jump right into it. So the first one is something that we've heard from a lot of candidates asking about, is that each state jurisdiction has the same set of requirements for CPA licensure.
Lauren, that's actually fiction. The exam is one of only what we refer to as four E's to CPA licensure. You have the education requirement, the exam, which is the only uniform requirement that is accepted by all jurisdictions. Then there is an experience requirement, and finally, an ethics requirement. Experience, education, and the ethic requirements vary by jurisdiction. So we always encourage the candidate, if you're unsure with your state's Board of Accountancy's requirements, just to go to their website and check them out to be certain, because as I mentioned, the exam is the only uniform requirement and everything else may vary.
Got it. And your jurisdiction doesn't necessarily have to be the jurisdiction that you live in, right?
Oh, yeah, that's absolutely certain. Of course, a lot of CPAs will become licensed in the state that they live or the state that they work, but the exam is uniform. And once you are licensed, there is mobility and you're able to transfer your license through an application process. So if you get licensed in Pennsylvania and your career takes you someplace else in the country, say you move out west to California, you certainly can become licensed there as well. So once you have the exam and you have the license, it will stick with you, barring that you've fulfilled the CPE requirements every year to maintain your license.
Got it. Okay. And that brings us actually to my next question. So beyond, you know, if you're in New York and you want to be licensed in California, what if you are an international candidate? Can you only take the exam if you're a U.S. citizen?
Oh, that's a great question, Lauren. That's actually fiction as well. So if you are not a U.S. citizen, you can still earn your CPA license as long as you meet one of the State Board of Accountancy's eligibility requirements. So there are 55 U.S. jurisdictions that provide a CPA license. And if you go through the process, I know NASBA actually has a process where they'll evaluate your credentials and your education to determine which state you would be able to sit for the exam and become licensed. But if you can't make it to the U.S. and you can't sit here, we also currently are testing in multiple international locations with plans to continue expanding. Right now, we have testing sites and the ability to sit for the exam. ProMetric is the testing center, so not testing sites that the AICPA runs, but there is the ability to sit for the exam in Europe, the Middle East, Asia, and South America. But if you want more information, you can go to our website, aicpa.org/CPA exam. And there is a international FAQs there, which will give you more information if you are a candidate that's looking to test outside of the U.S.
Got it. And from what I understand, there's a rise in international test takers. So it's good that we're expanding. Moving on. What about the content that's covered on the exam? Is that something that's available for anyone to review online if they, you know, want to see or get an idea of what's on the exam?
Yes. So that's one of the best resources that we have for candidates is all of the information of what's covered on the exam is available to candidates for them to review before ever scheduling their exam. So there's a great deal of information on our website again that talks about the structure of each of the four exams. So as I'm sure most of you are aware, there are four sections of the CPA exam. There's AUD, BEC, FAR, and REG, and each of the sections is broken up between 50% multiple choice questions and 50% task-based simulations, with the exception of BEC. BEC is the only section that includes a written communications assessment, which counts for 15% of that exam. So the TBSs and BEC will be 35% when the MCQs will still be 50%.
And just a note about the individual sections. So we actually have a few podcast episodes dedicated to each section where we speak with the section leaders who help develop those sections. And they give us some insight about what's tested in those sections, how they develop those questions, and a little bit of background about them, including how some of them who oversee those sections didn't necessarily pass those sections on the first go when they were
right.
candidates. So
Yeah. It's always interesting to hear the perspective from the folks directly in charge of that section. So you're getting firsthand information. I know that those sessions have been really informative, and I hope that the listeners are enjoying them. I'm sure in those sessions as well, the exam blueprints must have come up, and that's because they really are such a valuable resource for candidates who are preparing for the exam. It provides such clarity and transparency on what topics are covered on the exam. So there's no need to rack your brain. I wonder what I'm going to see when I sit for the exam. You can actually open up the blueprints, review them. There's so much information there. We include task statements, which basically are things that a newly licensed CPA might be expected to do in the real world in practice. And when we created the blueprints, we surveyed the profession to understand the importance of those tasks to inform and weight the content on the exam. So it's responsive to the needs of the profession, and you can tell the content area weightings from the blueprints, how much testing time will be dedicated or testing questions will be dedicated to that topic, as well as how deep we'll test you on a skills hierarchy. And that's also really important. I hope you have the chance to listen to each of the sections podcast for further information, but you can see, you know, if something is tagged as remember and understanding or application, you could bet that you'll probably see that as a multiple choice question. Whereas if it's tagged to a higher skill level, like analysis or evaluation, it's most likely that you're going to see that in a task-based simulation format. So just having that information alone gives you such a great sense of how you'll be tested on the exam and how to strategize your study plans, so you're not just going into the test blind. And
right.
That should really help boost your confidence.
Yeah, we've been promoting that as a pretty foundational preparation tool for candidates, especially as they're getting started. And what's good about the blueprints is that they're broken up by section. So it's not just one gigantic document that you have to sift through to get to the particular section you're preparing for. You can go directly into the blueprint document, you know, tailored to AUD or BEC or REG or FAR.
Right. I would suggest that if you look at it as one document, you might be overwhelmed, and no one's taking all of the exams in one sitting, at least, you know, most people aren't doing that. So as you're studying and preparing for each section, the first place you should go is that section's blueprint, and then whatever other resources you might be using.
So we know that there's definitely a resource out there to help candidates when it comes to content preparation. What about preparing for the look and the feel and the functionality of the exam? Is there a tool, you know, is it true or false, the AICPA sample test is meant to prepare me for the exam?
So that's a really good question. That's a fact. It's true. While the CPA sample test that's on our website is not necessarily meant to prepare you for the underlying content on the exam, it's there to familiarize you with the format and functionality of the exam. So you can kind of think of it as a test drive. You can go online at our website, work through sample exam questions, and familiarize yourself with the item types and the response formats so that when you go to ProMetric and you sit for your first exam, the software you're already comfortable with. It's not the first time you're seeing it. So the software that's on our sample test is the exact same software that you will be using at ProMetric. So it's kind of the best place for you to just be familiar with working through the different testlets, how to progress from testlet to testlet. If you want to flag a question to come back later, you can certainly do that. You can work with the authoritative literature. So the first time you're taking the exam, you don't have to wonder how to you navigate and search through the authoritative literature. You can practice doing that on the sample test. And having all of that under your belt will just help you become more confident when you go into the test center the day that you're scheduled to take the exam and be like, okay, I'm comfortable in how to use this software. I'm able to work through it without wondering, how do I go back or how do I progress? I'm not sure how to use the authoritative literature search. One of the other things I want to point out, we just enhanced the sample test to now include a few additional resources that we haven't had in the past. So candidates will have a few multiple choice questions in the beginning of the sample test that they can progress through. And then they'll also have task-based simulations and different types of task-based simulations that they might see when they actually take the test live. And we also, only in the sample test, will include the answer key. So you can see how the solutions are determined. You can see exactly what task statement the task-based simulation refers to in the blueprint. So you get an idea of, if you were to see that task statement in the exam, how you might be tested with it. And then we also have included some sample responses to written communication in BEC to give candidates a better idea of what an acceptable response would look like. So that's a great deal of information, and I encourage everyone to check it out before sitting for the exam, just to get comfortable with how to work with the software.
That's some very good advice. So the blueprints really should help you cover the content, and the sample test will help you cover the format and functionality. So you're sort of covering yourself on all fronts. Once you've kind of gotten past those and you're actually ready to test, and it comes to scheduling each of your sections, and this is a question we hear all the time from candidates: is there a right order for taking each exam section?
I always, when I go out to speak at different, student events or educator events, I hear this question a lot. And it's actually a great thing that there is no prescribed order. It's an individual decision based on, your unique experience and your own exam strategy. So I would suggest that whichever section you feel you're most prepared for and you're confident and you're feeling comfortable with the material, that's how you should decide which sections you're going to take. Some people might have the strategy, this was my strategy, that I wanted to prepare for what I perceived to be the easiest section so that I could just get it out of the way, have a boost of confidence, and, get myself pumped that I was able to handle, what was to come. Other people might decide they want to just buckle down and get what they think will be the hardest section out of the way first, and then it's just smooth sailing from there. So it really just depends on your own personality, your own time commitments. You should also take a look I'm sure you're familiar that there is an 18 month window for you to pass all four sections. So it may make sense to take a look at what your requirements and your time commitments are in the next 18 months. And if you have a chunk of time where you might have less responsibilities, that might be the time where you want to get some of the harder sections studied for. And when I say harder, that's different for everyone. Everyone has their own experiences, their own strengths and weaknesses. So what might be hard for me is, you know, easy to somebody else and vice versa. So I think that's the great thing, is it's really your own experience and your own decision on how you'll navigate through the process. But I do think it's important to kind of map out how much time you have and, you know, when you'll take each of the exams and make a plan that makes sense for you.
That makes sense. And does the same apply in terms of another common question? Is there a certain number of hours that somebody should study to sort of guarantee they're going to pass?
I mean, that's really hard to say. I think you can never over-prepare. You know, some people might say that, you know, anything over a 75 was wasted time, right? But I don't necessarily prescribe to that notion. I think, you know, the better prepared you are, the more confident you are when you go into the exam, and your nerves go away and you're just ready to buckle down and do it. So I think that you should do as much preparation that's right for you, so that you've done, you know, sample tests, you've done any mock tests that you might have from a review course provider, and you've worked through the problems and you're getting those problems correct. Once you feel that, okay, I've prepared for and I feel confident that I know what's covered in this section, you've looked at the blueprints and you say, yep, I understand that, I know that, I feel confident there. There might be an area where, you know, you haven't had much practical experience, or, you know, you haven't had coursework in, you know, recent semesters, that you might need to spend more time there because it's not as fresh to you. And again, it's all based on individual experience. If you're working in audit, you might not have to study as much in audit because you're doing that every day, and some of the tasks that you'll see on the exam might become second nature. But if you're, you know, haven't done or haven't taken any classes in audit, then you might have to spend more time there. So again, it's just really based on your own individual studying habits and your experience that'll dictate how much time you really need to dedicate.
Makes sense. And so you mentioned, you know, it's important to take those practice tests, get a feel for what your practice scores are. So moving to scoring, you mentioned, you know, some people aim for just the 75, which is passing score. Some aim for higher than that. In terms of how the exam is graded, is the exam curved in terms of grading?
That's definitely fiction. So many candidates and students ask me about that. How is the exam scored? I've heard that it's curved, and it certainly is not curved. The score that a candidate will receive is reported on a range that starts from 0 and goes to 99. And as many of you are aware, you need to have at least a 75 to receive a passing score. But that is not a percent correct. It doesn't correspond to you got 75% of the exam correct. So you can't interpret it that way. If you want a more detailed breakdown of how the exam is scored, you can also find that on our website at aicpa.org/CPA exam, and it'll give you more information about how you're scored.
Yeah, that's definitely a great resource to check out. There's a very thorough breakdown, like you mentioned, of how scoring works. And, you know, we want to make sure that candidates definitely understand the process and all the thought that goes into that process with our psychometrician team. So you've studied, you've checked out the blueprints, you've checked out the sample test, you've taken all four sections, you've passed with at least a 75 on each section. So you've passed the exam. You're not yet officially CPA, true or false?
That's true. So the exam is one of, it's only one of what I refer to as the four E's earlier. So if you've sat in for the exam, you've already had fulfilled your education requirements. But then you also have to fulfill the experience requirement, and that will vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, but typically it's at least 2,000 hours of work experience before you can receive your license. But once you've gotten that experience under your belt, you pass the exam, and in certain states passed a separate ethics exam, you can become and you will be licensed. So the exam is just one of the milestones on your path to becoming a CPA.
Okay. And so, you know, you mentioned that it's important to understand the candidate requirements. It's not just the exam that makes you a CPA automatically. So, you know, understanding candidate requirements, you know, we consider that falling into having a strategy when it comes mm-hmm. to preparing to become a CPA. Would you say that having, I mean, this seems pretty obvious, true or false, having a strategy will better help a candidate pass all sections of the exam?
That's absolutely true. We definitely encourage candidates to have a plan of attack. The exam is certainly doable, but it can be overwhelming. So the more resources you have and the more, you know, strategy you have to pass it, the better you'll be. We always say to start with understanding the requirements for licensure. We talked about the three or four E's. And then knowing what's going to be covered on the exam and how it's tested. So that's where the blueprints come in, the sample tests, if you're relying on a review course provider, you know, the material that they have prepared to help you work your way through the exam. So that's all important. But I think one of the most important strategies for candidates is time management. Because, you know, that's where some people might get themselves into a little bit of trouble or a little bit of hot water. You know, certain things might come up in your life that you're not, you know, preparing for, and that, you know, life happens. So you need to be able to have a plan for how you'll be able to study for each of the four sections. And I always say, give yourself a little bit of a cushion in case life happens and something unforeseen happens, that you're not up against that clock. And not only that, but making sure that you've prioritized your study time, you've, you know, put out a plan for how you're going to take all of the four sections, and then how are you going to get through those 4 hours of testing time? Make sure that you're comfortable with the content and you've done some practice tests, because, you know, sitting in the exam for 4 hours, you need to manage your time there as well. Are you spending too much time on multiple choice questions? You know, strategize how you'll get through all of the content that is there for you. Is also going to be important to make sure. I think time management is very, very important. And then relying on a support network, we found that, you know, we've talked to candidates that have gone through the process, and overwhelmingly we heard that those that had a strong support system from their family and friends and coworkers were, you know, more likely to have a successful process. So we want you guys to know that you don't have to go this alone. Find, you know, friends at work that might be studying and preparing for the exam, and, you know, you can lean on each other and, you know, share best practices or you know, how you're studying, or you know, same thing goes with, I know that there's different online communities. I know the CPA LinkedIn group that we have. Lauren, what is the LinkedIn group?
It's called the CPA exam candidate group. And that's a good point, that if you're hard pressed to find, you know, family or friends or colleagues who, you know, understand that process, there's a whole world of online support that you can
turn to. There's a lot of resources online, and, you know, just making sure that, you know, a lot of employers want you to get that CPA, so they'll be flexible and perhaps you need to take a little bit of time off or leave early. You know, don't be hesitant to ask for you know, the support that you need, because I'm pretty sure that you're going to you'll receive the support that you need.
That's a good point you mentioned about talking to your employer about, you know, that you're going through this process. And we actually have another episode coming out not too far from now, all about, you know, the culture within, you know, a firm or an accounting company, and how even at the interview you want to talk to them about what their stance is on encouraging their employees and providing flexibility when it comes to pursuing the CPA, and that, you know, you're interviewing the employer just as much as they're interviewing you. So you want to make sure that they have some program in place, whether it be giving you time off or giving you some kind of financial incentive, but just being flexible and knowing that this is something you're doing for your career and that they support and are behind you with.
Absolutely. It's a two-way street. It's a positive for the firm that you have your license, and it's a positive for you as well. So, you know, I believe at this day and age that most of the firms are going to stand behind you and want to support you any way they can.
Yep.
And then lastly, we say to rely on the exam partners, NASBA, the AIC, and Prometric. You want to go straight to the source to get the most accurate and up-to-date information about the exam, so that you aren't necessarily getting some information that might be outdated or inaccurate on some of the forums. So come straight to the source and you'll be sure to get the most up-to-date information.
Yep. So there you have it. We went through, you know, some facts and some pieces of fiction, and hopefully we cleared up some misconceptions that might have been out there. But they're always going to be floating around. And like Lori said, always, you know, turn to the source. Certainly, you know, go to other resources. Review course providers are great. We don't endorse any particular one, but we know a large percentage of candidates do work with them and see some great results. Speak to colleagues, speak to those who've maybe recently taken the exam. It can give you some advice. So there's a lot of information to take in when it comes to preparing. And we hope you found this helpful and informative. And good luck with your exam journey. And thank you, Lori, for joining us.
Thank you. Good luck, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Next Stop CPA. Got an idea for an upcoming episode topic, or just want to let us know what you think of the podcast? Share your thoughts with us at nextstopcpa@aicpa-cima.com. And don't forget to visit aicpa.org/CPA exam for the latest exam info.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered, and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.